It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. It's Sunday morning, as usual. It's 9:08, a little after 9, and it's time to talk about all the things that are on your mind from a money perspective on a Sunday morning. That includes the Trump tax plan. How does it impact you? We've talked for months about the Trump tax plan. Finally, an ever so detailed report that came out. I believe it was at least an entire page. Call it 16 bold fonts. Just extensive tax reform. Really, of course, you can sense some sarcasm because the tax, what came out of the Trump administration was about 10 times less what they had already released during the campaign. So there are a few things that we were wondering would actually be in the official release of this, and we got pretty much everything they've already said. So we're going to bring money back from overseas. We're going to have a tax holiday. They still didn't actually even give a rate for that. Widely expected that it'd be 10%, as companies like Apple and Google bring back trillions of dollars from overseas. What does that do? It pays for not a whole lot, is what it does. But it could put more jobs here in the United States. It could help companies stay here in the United States. Again, the brackets 7 down to 3. That was already widely expected. There's a little bit of a change in the brackets. Instead of the new brackets, 35, 25, 10. The corporate tax rate, 35 down to 15. That does, by the way, include, and this is a giant piece of the equation, and a giant piece of the equation that I still think the whole reason it was such a vague one-page bullet point outline, 16 font, probably less than 200 words, is that big pieces like this just have a really tough time, or will have a really tough time actually getting through. So this was a framework, an outline. Clearly, there needs to be negotiation on what the specifics are in each one of these, and the administration purposely left this very open to negotiation and open to discussion, and that's why it was not detailed. So if you think about, Trump's already said we want tax rates, corporate tax rates, big companies, because we're one of the highest tax developed nations in the world, to go from the high of 35 down to, which would be an extraordinarily competitive 15. He also included pass-through entities. And if you're not a pass-through entity, if you're a pass-through entity, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So this would be for a small business owner that has an S corporation or an LLC, and effectively runs all of the business income, it passes through directly to the business owner. There's some tax disadvantages to that. You have to pay extra Social Security tax. So the argument is that a small business operator, let's say someone who runs a service business, let's say you have your extermination business, or you're a plumber, or you're a handyman, you're running this through what's called a pass-through entity, and there, it's a very difficult tax situation. Well, now, plus, as your business starts to grow, you quickly get into these higher tax brackets, and you've got this, what potentially could be, of course, easily fall into the highest tax bracket. So imagine, though, if you're in the 39.6 tax bracket, let's say you're an attorney, and you're starting to make a lot of money, and now you're in the 39.6, or in the new Trump tax plan, the 35% tax bracket, because you're a pass-through entity, the new tax plan says, hey, wait a minute, you're going to be taxed at 15%. You're going to be taxed at 15%, just like Coca-Cola, IBM, Google, Facebook. That is a giant tax shift for anyone that's running their own business. Solo entrepreneurs, small companies, 30, 50, 100 people, this could be a giant tax break for that group. Now, I also think of all the pieces of the legislation, it's probably has the least amount of chance to actually get through. Many of the deductions are taken away. So if you think about what does Trump want to eliminate from a tax perspective? Well, he wants to eliminate the state and local tax deduction that most of us get in most states here in the nation, if there is a state income tax, Florida doesn't have one. Tennessee doesn't have one. But right here in Georgia, we've got a full 6% state income tax. The northeastern states like New York, New Jersey, those can get into the double digits as far as state tax. Now you can deduct from your federal return what you pay in state tax. Here's an example. If you make $250,000 a year, let's call it the state of Georgia, 6% of that's $15,000. So you pay $15,000 in Georgia state tax. You can then take that $15,000 as a deduction. If that gets eliminated, you no longer get that $15,000 deduction. So what does that really cost you out of pocket net-net? It costs about $5,000. So think about if you're paying about a third in taxes, you used to be able to deduct the 15, now you can't do it, it will cost you an extra $5,000. So these are the pieces of the equation, these getting rid of these giant tax deductions, state and local tax deductions, the estate tax, the alternative minimum tax. You're going to get, so yes, you're hearing, well, how is this going to be paid for? One of the ways this gets paid for, meaning that lower tax rates mean lower revenue to the Treasury. So our deficit gets even worse. You're going to hear about that in coming weeks and months as Congress goes through and battles on tax reform. Well, wait a minute, what does this do to you? Yes, it's great. It lowers taxes. Yes, it could stimulate the economy, but what about the deficit? Part of what we will come to see when this gets officially scored, you'll see that some of the tax revenue that comes back is the elimination of so many of these deductions. The sacred cows looks like they're spared. So that would be the mortgage interest deduction. That looks like it's safe. Charitable contributions. That looks like it's safe. But we've got to understand that this is just an outline. In fact, again, this is less specific, less detail, far less detail than we saw several months ago on the campaign trail. From what I can tell, I like the simplification, 7 down to 3 brackets. That's easy. Lower corporate tax. That's easy. One-time repatriation. Hey, let's bring back the trillions of dollars overseas, not helping companies here in the United States, not doing anything for our economy today. Let's bring it back. Let's get rid of the estate tax. That's fine. By the way, that does definitely help the Donald and his family, I would believe. And then some sort of territorial tax. And again, this is where there's an extraordinary amount of vagueness coming from the administration. Is the territorial tax some sort of border adjustment tax? We don't know exactly how that is going to work. We know that the border adjustment tax has lost a lot of popularity in the last couple of months in Washington. So will there be some sort of tax system that encourages U.S. companies to use goods sourced here in the U.S. and to import less and sell more of what we create here in the United States. Also repeal the Obamacare taxes of an additional 3.8%. So that, again, coming off of the table. We are not sure if this is revenue neutral or not. You're going to hear lots, and I've already heard lots of pundits say this is going to cost us trillions of dollars over the next decade. We're going to go further into debt. The one thing that the CBO, when they have scored these tax plans in the past, has continued to miss is the impact of economic growth. This will probably be the first time that the CBO actually uses something called dynamic scoring. So now it is at least widely understood and accepted that lower tax rates will actually mean a broader base of people paying and better economy, more stimulus, more revenue for companies, hence more taxes actually come into the system. So yes, lower tax rates, but a greater base of taxes coming in. That's called dynamic scoring. It means, hey, the economy thinks there's more activity out there, more tax collection, even though the rates are slightly lower. In the past, they have missed that. So if you go back and look at the tax cuts back in 2003, the CBO missed the tax. They underestimated how much would come in from a tax perspective. They underestimated by almost $400 billion. So when they said, well, when we went back and we look at the tax cuts in 2003, their revenue projections were tremendously wrong. So I'm looking back at this is research done by the Strategus Research Group. The CBO forecast following the 03 tax cut gave little consideration to the growth impact of tax cuts. And they missed GDP, by the way. So they misguided on overall economic growth by 1 $1 trillion. They were $1 trillion low. That's a big number. Over 5 years. It wasn't $1 trillion over 20. It was $1 trillion over 5 years. And their tax revenues that they estimated came in $394 billion more than forecast. So next time someone gives you the argument that lower tax rates don't lead to economic growth and don't lead to higher tax revenue, cite them the study that you heard from Wes Moss on Money Matters Sunday mornings from 9 to 11, talking about these are facts. This is a fact from the CBO back in 2003 and how much they missed it. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We were going to talk about active versus passive investment management. There's this giant debate going on Wall Street. The debate is heated up more than I've ever seen it in my 20-year investment career. So it's something we want to get to. And obviously, we have a lot going on here here on Money Matters. So good morning. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. The number here this morning, 404-872-0750. Today, cloudy, early with peaks of sunshine later, high of 85 and getting steamy. Tonight, scattered showers, low 68, Monday thunderstorms in the morning, partly cloudy skies late, high 74, low 54, so cools down a little bit. Weather brought to you by a Shoemate. We are going to come back straight ahead and begin this debate about active versus passive, and I want to also get to the phone. So if you're tuning in to Money Matters, good morning. Thanks for joining us. The fun part about the show, of course, are your financial questions, whether it's an IRA question, a tax question, an investment question, ETFs versus mutual funds versus annuities. Maybe it's a pension versus a lump sum question. Wes, which one should I take? I'm taking a retirement package and I might leave a year or two or three early. Maybe can I retire sooner than I might have thought? Well, we'll try to help you through and guide you through some of that math as objectively as humanly possible, more objective than any other financial show you will hear in the United States. So, good morning. Phone lines open. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. More Money Matters straight ahead.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning, 25 minutes past the hour. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. So first quarter economic growth just released at 0.7, so a little less than 1% for the first quarter. That's a pretty slow reading, the slowest we've seen in 3 years. GDP rose less than half of the economy's typical performance. It's been around 2%. And therein lies the problem. And that's what we've seen all around the world. Fascinating chart. If you go back to 1966 and you just draw a 3% trend line with GDP, you've seen all the way from 1966 all the way to the financial crisis. So through the 70s, 80s, 90s. Yes, and we had some dips and recessions, but the actual GDP growth hugs this perfect 3% line for the most part. Again, sometimes when we didn't quite hit it, times we overshot it. But for the most part, from the 60s all the way until 2008, we as a nation, we've grown gross domestic product by a rate of 3.1% year after year after year after year. That broke in 2007 when we hit the financial crisis, and it's been broken ever since. That lies in this giant political change we've seen, not just here in the United States, but all over the world. Now, and since the Great Recession, we've been growing at about 2% a year. So since we've recovered, it hasn't been a disaster, but it's just slower nominal growth. The difference, if we would have been continuing to grow at 3.1 versus the 2 that we've been growing, it's created about a $3 trillion gap, $2.8 trillion to be exact. And that has left Americans feeling like they haven't gotten ahead, hence the political winds of change that have happened here in the United States and around the world. We're going to pick this up after news, weather, traffic. Your calls and questions will go to the phones here on Money Matters. Again, the number, phone lines open, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, or Money Matters straight ahead.
WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. A little overcast right now today. Cloudy early, peaks of sunshine later. High of 85 today, so it's going to get starting to get steamy in hot Atlanta. Tonight, scattered showers, low 68. Monday, thunderstorms in the morning. Partly cloudy skies late. High of 74, low of 54, brought to you by Shoemate. So there's an awful lot to catch up on here. Of course, last week we started talking about the concept of dividends and why dividends don't lie. And that's something I've written about. You can find that on clarkhoward.com. You can find it, well, go to clarkhoward.com and you can find a piece I talked about why, several reasons, five, I believe I put a bonus reason, so six different reasons why dividends make sense to me as an investor, as a philosophy. And I was in Florida this week doing several talks about income investing. So what do you do in a rising interest rate environment? What do you do with the stock side of the equation? What do you do with the bond side of the equation? What do you do with closed-end funds and REITs and MLPs and all the areas that make up all the pistons in the engine? I think of an investment portfolio as a, let's call it a six-cylinder engine, and you've got six separate areas that are all generating horsepower or income for you. All in slightly different ways. Some are dividends, some are interest, some are distributions. Some of those pistons go in and out of favor. Today, the way I see it here is that dividend-paying stocks, it's still one of the main areas of growth. MLPs, the pipeline industry, still looks attractive. REITs, not as much. Closed-end funds, not as much. Bonds, not as much. But at any given time, you're going to have all of those six working for you in some capacity. But you may have a period of time where two or three or four of them are working or producing even more or even a better value. And that's today, I go around the country talking about that and try to help investors understand what areas of income investing right now are the most advantageous. How do you build a long-term strategy that you can live with that generates income? And it's not a perfect science. It's not the only way to do it. So I get questions, well, Wes, what about growth investing? You know what? There's nothing wrong with it at all. You buy Apple or Google, not Apple because Apple's a dividend paying stock now. You buy Google or Facebook or Amazon, any of these companies that have been these wonderful growth companies, and they don't pay dividends, and that's not an income oriented investment, and that's fine. It doesn't mean that so when I talk about income investing, it's not the only way to do it. In fact, an interesting statistic, it's just the way I do it. It's the way we do it with the team of investment advisors that I work with. And it's a big part of philosophically how we believe in investing, which leads into this big question mark about active versus passive investing. Another quick, interesting historical note as we live and walk through history of markets, the NASDAQ hit 6,000 this week and has hit 25 record closes in 2017. That's the most all the way since back in 1999. If you look at where we are today, again, a lot of that activity and a lot of the rise in the NASDAQ is coming from just a few soldiers, if you will. Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, which is parent company Alphabet. Those companies, if you put those four companies together, they exceed the gross domestic product of South Korea. They exceed the gross domestic product of Australia. That is how gigantic and dominant these companies have become. And we were, Jim Cramer was jumping up and down on, I think, Friday morning or Thursday or Friday of this week about how Domino's is the best stock that's ever been. Domino's Pizza, to be exact. And he recalls back about a decade ago, stock is at $10 a share, having the new CEO on, and Jim Cramer says, you know what, your pizza is awful. It's the worst pizza I've ever had. And the CEO didn't defend it. He said, yes, you're right. In fact, our pizza is so bad that I would rather eat the cardboard box that our pizza comes in. And then over the next year or two, they straightened a pretty important problem out, and that's the taste of the pizza. So they fixed that problem. And then, like no other pizza company, from a technological basis, figured out a way to make it so easy for you to order Domino's. And now you can order Domino's from your watch. You can order it online. You can order it on Facebook. You can order it in an underwater scuba diving capsule somewhere from your shoe. That's how easy Domino's has gotten. And today, Domino's is close to $200 a share. $10 to $200. And that is the kind of rise that makes any investor think, well, wait, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I just find Domino's? Why didn't I find the next Domino's? Well, it doesn't really go back to income investing. That is home run. That is big game hunting, if you will. And it works sometimes, but there are a lot of misses along the way. Income investing is really a more methodical approach that generates income monthly and monthly and monthly. And none of it is extraordinary in any given year, but over time, 3 and 4% every single year on top of growth can make a lot of sense, or at least to me. So good morning, welcome to Money Matters. This debate of active versus passive investing and active mutual funds lag their passive counterparts. There is a great swirl of disagreement and argument and debate over this topic, and I'm going to weigh in on it with you here. And this may be one of the themes of this year. I've written about it over the past couple of weeks. It's taken a lot to kind of bring it all together, but I want to talk about it here today on Money Matters. I also want to go to the phones, and I know we had some folks holding earlier. Now that we're back on, I want to get back to the phones and have an opportunity to answer your questions. That's the fun part about Money Matters. We do every Sunday morning. We're one of the last objective bastions of financial radio, I believe, left in the country, maybe the world. But if you have a pension, let's say, so here are questions that we'd love for you to call in, and we'll have a discussion with you. And I'll try to give you at least a third party objective answer. A lot of times financial questions are, hey, we could do this, we could do that. Well, neither is necessarily wrong. And both paths could potentially work. It's really a fork in the road. They both end up maybe getting to the same place, but what is a better path to take at this point or this time in your life? And I'm happy to weigh in on that. Maybe wife says one thing, husband says another. Well, I'm here to maybe be a tiebreaker. And maybe the question has to do with early retirement. Maybe you're wondering about your pension options. Hey, your company's offering a lump sum or a monthly amount. Hey, Wes, which one do I take? What's a better option to take? Like so many of the folks from Boeing or all over the country that are getting these early packages or early pink slips before you maybe thought, well, what's a better option for you to take? Maybe it's a question about mutual funds or ETFs. Which one, have you made a shift to this? Are you thinking about which one is better or worse? Maybe your advisor or your broker is just trying to get you to change something. Hey, let's do this something new. And you're wondering, hey, is this a good deal for me or not? Is it right for you guys, for you and the family? Which, that's the most important piece of the equation. Is it right for you? How about cash? It's still just sitting around earning virtually nothing. We've seen interest rates creep up. We've seen money market rates getting back to the point where they're actually paying something, 0.5%. Some of them are getting closer to 1%, and you've got cash sitting there doing almost nothing. What do you do? Where do you head if cash is just sitting on the sidelines and it's getting frustrating because it's not doing anything? And maybe you're just in charge of new money. Maybe it's an inheritance or a settlement or a lump sum, and you're the trustee. It's your responsibility. It's a big responsibility. We're here to help you maybe work through that. And maybe it's just a retirement plan question, a 403B or a 401K or the TSP if you're a government employee, or an IRA or Roth question. It's retirement account related. We're happy to weigh in on those rules and how to maximize those vehicles. And then again, those same vehicles that now you have to take your required minimum distribution that hits when you're 70 and a half. What do we do with it? How do we make this strategy work? These are all the things we'd love to answer your questions about here on Money Matters this Sunday morning. So the number here in the studio, give us a call, 404-872-0750. If you're sitting around having coffee, reading the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, good for you, listening to Money Matters, the number here in the studio, Ryan Ely, ready to take your call for me to answer. So again, 404-872-0750 is the number, or 1-800-WSB-TALK Again, 1-800 for our folks in Seattle and Texas and Michigan. Good morning to you. 1-800 WSB Talk. So we go back to this argument, and I want to get to, or at least start talking about, the very important argument about active versus passive investing. So what works better? Should you just put everything in an index and let it ride? Or should you have some sort of active hedge fund where you're buying and selling and buying and selling? Or is there somewhere in between? And that's this great debate that almost every investor goes through at some point and revisits and revisits. The more you read, the more you think, wait a minute, maybe this is the way we should be doing it. And it immediately makes me think of some of these other points in the economy or these other industries that are under pressure. So think about retail. So what are retail stores? Cars that are driven by humans and active mutual funds, what do they have in common? Well, their continued viability, they're all allegedly in doubt. And you're going to find, and there's press on this all over the place. So I've read articles on TMZ about XYZ place closing, all the way to Business Insider, all the way to you name it, Wall Street Journal. They've all had a field day talking about America's retail death spiral. There's a Philadelphia publication I read this weekend, and the headline was a retail death spiral as we see stores close. All stores are closing now because we've had hundreds of stores close out of hundreds of thousands. And now the press is saying, look, all stores are going away. And the same thing goes back to the dominance of self-driving cars. Elon Musk is saying, you know what? We're not going to be driving cars in a few years. It's going to be all automated. It's going to be all artificial intelligence. It's going to be all satellite driven. Cars are driving themselves. Well, you won't drive anymore. Really? And then the financial press is, and this is where this one gets me a little bit. It's almost this jubilance. It's like, oh, guess what? You know what's going to be extinct soon? Active mutual funds. They're excited about it. What are they going to write about next? Well, there's a lot to this story, and we're going to continue to talk about it. So cars and retail shopping and investing, they all have this doom and gloom black cloud hanging over them. And I want to talk through that because I think the press is making it out to be a lot worse than it really is. Are active mutual funds going to die? The answer, absolutely not. We're going to still drive cars and we're going to still shop. We're going to still go buy our own clothes and our own shoes and our own camping gear and our own adventure gear, because all of these items and these industries have one major, major thing in common. And that is the driving and powerful force of human emotion. These industries have in different amounts, have a heavy dose of human emotion that drives consumer behavior, investment behavior. And until human emotion gets wiped out of this planet, none of these industries are going to go away. They'll change, yes, but not go away. And that's a discussion we need to continue to have. And I want to go to the phones. So we're going to do that. News, weather, traffic straight ahead. The website, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. You've tuned into Money Matters right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Back to Wes Moss for the money and investing advice you need.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Right to the phones here, Keith in Greensboro. Keith, good morning. Welcome to the show. What's up? How can I help?
Morning, Wes. How are you doing this morning?
Good, good.
I have a question about IRAs and 401ks. I'm 57. I have two separate simple IRAs from previous employment. I have an individual IRA, and I have a Roth. These are all separate accounts.
Got it.
And I'm covered under a 401k at my present employer.
You are surrounded by retirement plans. That's probably that's a good thing, Keith.
Yeah. My question is, I think that the tax benefit would be greater. Let me back up. My CPA said that since I'm covered under an employer-sponsored plan, I cannot make contributions to any of my IRAs.
Well, just a quick distinction on that. It's not that you can't make contributions. It's just that you can't make deductible contributions.
Correct.
Is probably what he's saying. Yes.
Yes, absolutely correct. My question is, I think that the tax benefit would be greater to me if I withdrew from the employer-sponsored 401k plan and then made contributions to my own IRAs. Is that, would that be allowed?
Well, again, it doesn't save you from, so you're saying you want to pull money. Wait, you're not retired, right? You're still working.
I'm not retired. I just think that the tax benefit, if I could make a deductible contribution, the tax benefit would be greater to me than under the 401k.
Yeah, but the way the rules though work, Keith, it's the fact that you're covered by a plan. It's not that you use it or not use it. It's the fact that you could use it.
Eligible.
You're eligible, okay. And you make a certain amount of money in your case, which obviously your CPA is probably, he knows what the level is, and he's saying, look, because you're covered or eligible for the plan and you make X amount, then boom, you are no longer, it's not an option for you to do that. So, you know, there's always this talk of, and Keith, thanks for your call and your question, but yeah, you can't just withdraw from the 401k in order to then make yourself eligible to do these other deductible contributions. It doesn't work that way. I mean, the good news is here, you've got a lot of different options. You've got 401k, a simple, a Roth, and all these other areas to use. Just make sure that you're not trying to get too creative and try to circumvent the tax code. It just never